Gentlemen, he's been with us on numerous occasions. We were discussing all kinds of things this morning. We're going to be taking a look at the crime situation and some of what the business community thinks needs to be done. Joining us now, Attorney Martin George. Good morning to you and welcome back to our program. Trying to see if we can get Attorney Martin George with us on. Katanya, are you hearing us clearly? We seem to be having lots of problems with our Zoom.
Good morning to you, Satish. Good morning to your listeners and Freedom 106.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing you very softly though.
Good morning to you, Satish.
Okay, yeah, we'll run the interview for a shorter period because of the challenges. I know that we have you on Zoom on your phone and all of these things. This morning, for the time that we do have, crime continues to be on the front page of the newspapers. We continue to have all of these troubling cases of home invasions. Business people now are more and more under attack, and we do not seem to be seeing the kind of response that some are suggesting we need from the authorities. I know that apart from being an attorney, you're very much involved in business in Tobago, the business organizations, and you would have an opinion of crime, not just in Tobago, but in Trinidad and Tobago as well. Let's begin with your views on whether or not the crime situation is being addressed in the manner that it should be.
Well, Satish, I think the answer to that is obvious. You know, I mean, I don't think there's anybody in Trinidad and Tobago, maybe possibly with the exception of some members of the national security apparatus, who would think that the crime situation is being handled properly. You know, we do recall that the police commissioner, some months ago, when asked to rate her performance, she gave herself a perfect score. So apparently there are some who exist in an alternate reality, you know, different from the real world where you and I live, where most of your listeners live, you know. I mean, because the point is, crime touches and affects the ordinary citizen almost daily, you know, in different ways, from, you know, different aspects. So, you know, for anyone to say that, you know, they're doing a great job or an excellent job, or, you know, that they're going to make this major reduction in murders by June, and, you know, those kind of, you know, wild statements, you know, it clearly shows a disconnect from reality, because the reality is that one way or the other, you and I and most of our listeners would know somebody, some family, some relative, some friend who has been directly affected by crime. And, you know, the thing is, it sometimes seems that it's only when it, you know, reaches the doorsteps of the rich and powerful, you know, like we saw with the attack on the wife of the NIB chairman, Mr. Patrick Ferreira, his wife, you know, when she was attacked at her Westmorland's home, you know, it seems like it's only then that you hear the authorities, you know, having something to say, if you understand me. But the point is, everyday ordinary citizens are being gunned down, being attacked, being robbed, being, you know, their shops, their homes are being attacked, you know, their business places. You're talking about, you know, small businesses all over the place, you know, little parlors being attacked, bars, you know, little restaurants, everything, you know, it's like nowhere is safe anymore. So, I mean, we are in the midst of a crisis. You just look at the headlines of the Express today. They say it was like gunshots, like thunder, you know, somewhere up in Arima. You know, and I mean, the point is, there isn't a day that we are not hearing about some murder, and it's all through a proliferation of illegal firearms that is all over Trinidad and Tobago. You know, I mean, when you read stories, like, you know, you hear about one man was killed and they found 46 spent shells. This means that these guys, they have such an excess of arms and ammunition that they don't care, man. They could spray ammunition, if you understand me, you know. So therefore, it's not surprising that when you hear, you know, the leader of the opposition, Ms. Kamala Prasad Bisesa, stand on the political platform and say, well, hey, listen, if you get a chance, empty the clip in the bandits, that resonates with people. I could understand, you know, I could understand the frustration that people feel, because they feel, well, hey, listen, we at war, we're under siege, you know, so therefore they feel that, look, you know, there's no alternative. You know, I mean, of course, that in itself carries its own, you know, set of scenarios, and that is its own kind of worms there. But the reality is that the average citizen feels helpless, just basically a sitting duck, and like it's only a matter of time before it comes home to you. And that could not be a good feeling. That cannot be, you know, something that you have to live with as your reality in a country where, you know, you're supposed to be able to, you know, carry out your business, conduct your business, go about your daily affairs, you know, go to school, go to work, drop your children, you know, whatever. But the point is, you have to be looking over your shoulder all the time. All the time you have to be looking over your shoulder. You know, you can't go out. I could take your family out at night to say, well, look, enjoy a nice dinner, go to a movie, because you feel so fearful. You feel, well, hey, listen, boy, I don't know what could happen. I don't know if a car is going to follow us home. I mean, it's really, really a scenario where we are living in a state of national insecurity.
We do have joining us as well, CEO of the TNT Chamber of Industrial Commerce. We've spoken to him on numerous occasions. Let's welcome back to our program, Mr. Stephen DeGans. Good morning to you. Welcome to our show this morning.
Good morning, Martin. Good morning.
It's nice to have you with us here this morning. We are discussing, again, the matter that we spoke to you when we had our Anti-Crime Week initiative, and that's the issue of crime. It's on the front page. It's the criminals are getting more and more brazen. Some of the acts more heinous, and with us as well, Attorney Martin George, he summed up in his opinion that it's a situation that is not getting out of control. It's out of control, and it does not seem as though we are getting the action or the response that we need as a nation. What's the Chamber's perspective on how the crime situation is being handled?
Well, I actually tend to agree with Martin, Father Martin. This is out of control. If anyone had told me that Trinidad would be in a situation like this, where people rob and take advantage of citizens so openly and brazenly and get away with it, I would have thought 3 years ago, I thought this is impossible. We can't allow our country to get like that. So seeing it in that situation is very alarming. It's disappointing that we should have arrived at this situation. And I tend to think that most of the country is a good country, and we're already dealing with a handful or maybe a very small percentage of our citizens that are acting in this way. I firmly believe that we're not doing enough about it. And I don't mean necessarily just the police. The police do have their responsibilities, as do we. However, even though we have our responsibilities, it is dependent on the Trinidad Tobago Police Service and the armed forces to really restore order to the country. The rate we're going, we could end up in turmoil and not even realize that we're in it. It's like that frog that you warm in water and eventually it boils to death and it doesn't even know it's dead, because it's just been going so slowly and getting worse and worse, and it doesn't realize what it's in. But the situation we have here is untenable. We cannot continue to have the amount of lawlessness that we have in a small society like ours and expect it to get very much better unless we do something actively about it.
Well, what do we do? And I think that's the question now that needs to be answered.
That is a good question. I mean, we don't want to take the law into our own hands, and I certainly can't push something like that. I'm of the firm belief that, and I've advised accordingly when given the opportunity, I'm not sure if I'm totally agree with that. I think that we have to get into a situation where every single law in this country is, you know, upheld. So if I am driving on the highway at 120 kilometers an hour, I should be stopped, that I should be given a ticket. If I am, and I'm saying every law, because it has to start with something, and I think that we have to go back to the one place and said it a while back, zero tolerance. We allow things in Trinidad, and we say, oh, that's just a small thing, that's just a small thing. But, you know, if someone is driving badly on the road and a policeman stops them, and then they discover that they don't even have a license or they don't have insurance, those are the types of people that also commit other crimes of a nature. And if we apprehend everyone for those things, sure, we can let them off if it's a broken taillight that they didn't know about or something like that. But if we were to uphold all the laws in this country and become a law-abiding country, then we'd also track down a lot of those people who break many laws, but they just get away with it, and then they move on to much, much worse things. I think that's a starting point, because it's very difficult as a policeman to be defending the country when you have to go against criminals that are in a situation when you are in a shootout or something like that, and you have people who are much more expensive and much more equipment than you do. So we have to go back to the basics of apprehending people for everything or giving a ticket for everything, just to start establishing law in this country again.
Attorney Martin George, where do you think we need to begin?
Well, the thing is, I mean, we need to look at the two main root causes: illegal guns, illegal drugs. You know, I mean, let's be honest. Those are the major sources that fuel this crime wave. So we have to find a way to tackle them at the source. And when I say at the source, for instance, the police service at one point used to have a very active and efficient marine branch where they had their own vessels on the water patrolling our coastlines. So this is separate and apart from whatever the Coast Guard was doing. The police were also able to have their vessels out there. Right, what has happened to that? That whole marine branch was shut down several years ago. There was talk of reviving it. You know, I mean, so the point is, if we are not doing the basics to stem the tide for the flow of illegal drugs and illegal guns, then we are basically just, as the saying goes, spinning top in mud. In other words, you have to also look at the ports, the legal ports of entry also. You know, I mean, so many instances we've had where containers have been unstuffed and, you know, they've been found to be filled with drugs, filled with illegal guns, right? And then you hear nothing further of it. So what? There was no consignee named on that container? Where was it sent from? Who's the consignor? It must have been sent by somebody. So how come we are not able to follow up on those things? Remember the cocaine in the juice tins? We made a big hullabaloo. Up to now, not a single person has been arrested for these things. So the question remains, are we really serious about tackling the root causes? Or is it that we pay lip service to that and then we seek to say, well, look, let us go and try to arrest the criminals on the ground, you know, who really are just the foot soldiers at the bottom of the food chain. They are not the ones who are the financiers. They are not the ones who are importing a container of drugs or a container of illegal guns. So therefore, why is it that we are not trying to get to the root of it, to deal with it once and for all? Because basically, if you only focus on the bottom end, right, it's a never-ending supply. Right? If you get one bandit off the street today, you have two or three that spring up in his place. So therefore, it's really difficult to try to attack it there only. Of course, you have to deal with it there also. But what I'm saying is, if that's your only focus, you know, and therefore you go into some communities and you have a raid on the community or whatever. But the point is, okay, if you do that and okay, you manage to get maybe a few illegal guns, whatever, from that community, at the end of the day, why are you not trying to determine who is supplying and sourcing the guns for them? You remember where on Monos Island, when a large shipment of drugs was found, right? and they ended up charging either the watchman or the gardener. I mean, seriously, he imported a whole shipment of drugs, if you understand me. But we keep playing these games in Trinidad and Tobago, you know, and then politicians love going in parliament and spouting off and saying, well, we're going after Mr. Big, and, you know, they feed us these catchphrases. But at the end of the day, nothing is really being done about the source, the feedstock. And Satish, I am telling you, unless and until Trinidad and Tobago gets serious about tackling these things at the source, and I am saying categorically and unequivocally, the source of most of the crime and criminal activity in Trinidad and Tobago is illegal guns, illegal drugs.
Gentlemen, we need to take a
We will always have a problem.
We need to take a couple quick messages to take us up to news, but when we get back after the news, I want to get from both of you. We've heard the issues, and I think we've identified much of what those issues are. And we've put forward as well a couple suggestions, but we're facing a real problem. If we could talk from now until we blew in the face, how do we get the decision makers to take the action that is being suggested needs to be taken? And I'll get your responses to that just after the 8 o'clock news. For those of you now joining us, we are speaking with Attorney Martin George and CEO of the TND Chamber of Industry and Commerce, Stephen DeGans. A couple messages, news, and then we get back with our discussion. Stay with us.
This is the Morning Rumble with Satish Mahabir.
Welcome back. 3.5 minutes after 8. Speaking this morning for just a bit again, Attorney Martin George and CEO of the TNT Chamber of Industry and Commerce, Stephen DeGans. Gentlemen, I must let you know that the technical difficulties in studio, we're hearing you very, very softly, and that's both of you. It's something that the technicians have identified we need to correct, but we'll carry the interview on for just a short period of time again, because it is difficult to hear both of you with the volume being as low as it is. So before we went to the news, I suggested that we need to start looking at how we effect some of these changes, some of these initiatives that we think are relevant or are essential in fighting crime. And that might be our closing comments from both of you this morning. Mr. DeGans, CEO of the TNT Chamber of Industry and Commerce, I know that the business community has been making some pronouncements for quite some time on the crime situation. Recently, we saw DOMA speaking out, saying that this issue of crime needs to be addressed. The situation is bad. What have you been hearing from your members? And you suggested one thing already, but how do we get the authorities to do those things that are being suggested?
Well, you know, interesting that you should bring that up, Satish. We've met as a chamber. We've met as joint chambers, and that we've had some joint chambers with some of our compatriots in other areas. And we've also met with regional chambers, all intent on trying to figure out what we could do with crime in this country. And there's absolutely no shortage of suggestions of different ideas. And I'm talking about all the greater regional chambers. I'm talking about, you know, in San Fernando, in the East, the Eastern Merchants Chambers. We've had meetings with all of these people. They've come together and all have the same intent of how to make the country rid of crime. We would very much, and we have written letters, and we have asked, and we have emailed, and we've tried to meet with the Commissioner of Police. It has not been forthcoming. We have tried. So we feel like all of us want to help in some form or fashion, but we're not being allowed or even given the opportunity for an audience to make suggestions or to see how we could collaborate. So when Caitlin called me and asked me to be on this panel today, I jumped to the opportunity, because this is actually, frankly, the only way that we need to be able to talk to these people in power, through hopefully they're listening to stations like this. It's unfortunate that we all want to help, but we don't seem to be given the opportunity. So we're all trying to help in our own little way, and getting together and seeing what we could do as a group, not trying to break the law, of course, but we don't seem to be able to get the ear of the authorities that really can make the difference. And that's quite disappointing.
Well, I remember you saying the very same thing to us during the week, the campaign that we had for an entire week focusing on crime and some of the initiatives to help. And I thought that to be such an indictment against the authorities. And it's not that you want to single out or you want to be harsh or you want to bash or whatever else, but how do you have a situation where business institutions, organizations like yours, representing the largest number of businesses in the country, wanting to speak to the police commissioner, and the police commissioner not even acknowledging the attempts to speak with her? And
To be bluntly honest, I have been acknowledged. I have been promised a meeting, but this has been going on since very early July, and we are now at the end of August, and I still have not been granted this upcoming meeting. So you're talking 2 months, and this is a very urgent issue. So I would prefer that we could have dealt with it in July, so we have progress in August, not still waiting for the meeting. So while I have received an acknowledgement, I have not received a meeting.
Well, it's probably one of the same, because acknowledging your request and then not meeting with you is just as not acknowledging your request in the first instance. But it's sad. Sad might not necessarily be the right term. Probably worrisome might be a better term.
It's disappointing, it's worrisome. You know, a lot of the negative adjectives, really.
Attorney Martin George, some of the things that you think need to be done, you've dealt with government on several levels. How do you think we can begin to get those in authority to even listen and consider some of the proposals being made?
Well, one of the excellent things about today's discussion is that we have the CEO of the TNT chamber here with us, because I have noticed in the past that if at all the chamber takes a decisive decision, maybe a drastic decision in relation to any issue, the government sits up and takes notice. So maybe we need, in terms of the other chambers, to collaborate with and speak with the TNT chamber, and maybe all the business groups and entities need to come together and maybe agree on one decisive course of action which will get the government's attention, which will basically say, hey, listen, it's not that we want to give an ultimatum, but we are saying if this is not dealt with, we are going to be taking these steps. If you understand me, we cannot continue to, be playing Mr. Nice Guy, you're sitting politely waiting to be acknowledged, waiting to be called upon, waiting to be heard, waiting to be given an audience. We have to get to some point where we have to basically be knocking on the door and saying, hey, listen, you need to let me in. You need to let me in. I can't sit down waiting on a letter from you to come back, to say when you are going to grant me an audience, like in the medieval days where the king would, grant a favor to a peasant and say, well, okay, look, next year this time you will be granted an audience with the king, and you come in, you bow in and scrape in obsequiously before the king. No, we have to take a stand. And it has to be some sort of very decisive action that we are saying, listen, if it is that things are not put in place, if it is that we are not met with, then these are the things we are going to do. Because let me tell you, we are quickly approaching the point of no return in Trinidad and Tobago. I always say that the first major watershed event in Trinidad and Tobago were the events of 1970. Violent and aggressive as they may have been, they did bring about some positive change. The second major watershed event in Trinidad and Tobago was the event of 1990, that coup, and that sent us into a downward spiral from which we have not yet recovered. suffered, we are still feeling the after effects of that, because it's after that you saw the explosion and the proliferation of illegal guns on the streets. You know, you saw crime start to increase. You saw the norm being, you know, the criminal activities, the large number of murders, etc. So we have just gone down a slippery slope for decades, and we need to arrest that. And we of the Tobago Chamber, we are willing to partner with the Trinidad and Tobago Chamber of Industry and Commerce, with all the other business chambers, with the coalition of regional chambers, you know, for us to come together and take a common stand and basically send a very clear and decisive message to the government. You know, and I mean, this is not something political. I want to make it very clear, you know, so it has nothing to do with which party is in government. We are basically saying, hey, listen, you are in charge now. You need to deal with this, regardless of whichever political party would have been in charge. We would say the same thing. So we need to make that clear, because, you know, some business persons are very, you know, shy of making any statement or comment because they feel, well, you know, it may be viewed as you're attacking the government politically, and then you could be victimized. You wouldn't get a contract, you wouldn't get a sale, you wouldn't get payment for your invoice or whatever. So we have to be very clear. It's not anything political. It's simply basically in defense of country and standing up for Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah. Gentlemen, there's only going to drop the curtains on our interview this morning because of the challenges, but it's a discussion that needs to have a part 2, 3, 4, 5, and as many parts as we need to until we get the results. And I'll tell you this, the government, they listen as to whether or not, well, let me just say that they hear. Listen and hear is two different things.
Indeed.
I had an interview with Farah. Yeah, they're here because I had an interview with Faris Al-Rawi just before the local government election, and he referenced our entire week of programming focused on crime, which means that somewhere, somehow, somebody sent the message to them.
Yes.
I want to thank both of you for being with us here this morning. Mr. Degans, you are making some pronouncements that are cause for concern, and Mr. George as well, but we will have a part two. And we will continue our discussion. So I thank both of you for being with us here this morning and for giving us your insights and into the beginning of our discussion here that hopefully we expect will bring us some of the results that we need. Thank both of you for being with us again this morning.
You're most welcome, and a great day to you. And thank you, Mr. Degans.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks a lot. We're all united in the same thing. Mm-hmm. We all want our country back, and we can do it.
Yeah. But once there's life, there's hope, and we still have life, a lot of us. Thank you so much for being with us here this morning, gentlemen.